Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. My name's Joe Harvey, and as ever, I'm joined by our very, very busy sub-editor, Chris Hill.
Yeah, busy time, Joe, but always looking forward to each of these Rugby World Cup podcasts, so all good. How's things, Joe?
Yeah, all right. I had to watch Canada lose earlier, more on that later, and then I had to watch the USA, who, not so long ago, I backed to beat England.
Yeah, I can't remember which podcast it was, but if you go back through the Talking Rugby Union podcast list on Audio Boom, you'll be able to probably find one where Joe says, on a number of occasions, that England will lose to the USA. And the complete opposite, I think, happened this morning.
Yeah, but we'll get onto that in a second, because some people might be wondering, what is Talking Rugby Union? Talking Rugby Union is a large, independent, kind of free magazine for rugby union content. Lots of feature interviews. I think this week we've had more than usual, actually, in a really odd way.
We've had one from Paul B with Canada, with Kingsley Jones from yourself, Joe. I think all of them have been from you, actually. We've had Andy Goode. We've had who else? We had
Harry
Campbell.
Oh, Bryce Campbell. He's got a try today.
Yes, he did. He did. So we've had a couple of World Cup ones, and we've had Harry McNulty, the Irish sevens player, as well. I don't think I've ever subbed an article that involves both rugby and Love Island. So that was
you were loving life.
Yes, I thought that dreams have come true. Busy time, and all will continue over the next few days, I'm sure, Joe. But yeah, it's been another busy week at the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, and it's set to continue until the start of November. So we've got a full month of Rugby World Cup goodness. We're going to start off by talking about England's 45-7 win over the USA in, I believe it's pronounced Corbe.
Yes. I mean, I think everyone I've heard over the last sort of, at the end, since the final whistle of the Tongi game to this one, has called it Kobe City.
Kobe City,
but Nick Mullins on the ITV commentary said this is how you pronounce it. So yes, you are right, Joe.
And he is a man that I appreciate massively, because he uses a pencil case.
Right.
He replied to me when I said, oh, this is really delving back into my mental scarring. So basically, I used to take a pencil case to uni, got rinsed, rightfully so.
Right.
And then when I saw Nick Mullins using a pencil case, felt just
the best in the business using a pencil case, mate.
Exactly. And Nick Mullins. So England winning 45-7. I think there was, hang on, let's count the tries, because I don't think I can usually count that high.
I think it was seven, wasn't it, John?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 tries. Chris Hill, bang on.
Yeah.
You didn't even watch 20 minutes of the game.
Well, I missed the first 10 minutes of the second half.
Yeah, not too bad. And of course, the USA got the first red card of the tournament. Now, we'll start off with England's performance. Chris, I feel like we're here for maybe the third time in a row, the third podcast in a row, where we're saying we still don't feel massively convinced by England.
Yeah, I mean, I think all the talk that England wanted to do was have a quick start against the USA. It was a bit rugged and stuff against Tonga. So when George Ford went over early on, all signs were good. England started really well. But then even though they were putting pressure on the USA, they just couldn't create chances. But then as soon as that second try, I can't remember who scored now, there's so many. I think it was
Billy
Vunipola, yeah, from the rolling maul. England just said, well, that's a tactic we're going to use. They had the chance to go for the post. They went to the corner. It worked. And you said, Joe, when we're watching it, that's the way England can go forward now in the game. And that took them into a commanding lead at half-time. And in the second half, it was very similar to the Italy game, wasn't it? Just before they flew out to Japan, they just seemed to cut loose some great tries, but it was all, in a way, too easy for England. USA tired after England completely battered them up front in that first half, I thought. So, not convincing in terms of free-flowing, top-gear England, but if you said to Eddie Jones before the game, you're going to get this result, he would absolutely take it. So it's another bonus point win. No real injuries at all for England again, unscathed, going into the two biggest games of the World Cup with maximum points. So from an England perspective, that has to be the positive, outweigh the negatives, I think.
Yeah, one man that did convince was the man of the match, George Ford. I thought he was pretty magnificent. I think within 30 minutes, he had given England 508 metres through just kicking the ball to the sideline.
Yeah, he has been absolutely brilliant, hasn't he, for England recently. I mean, we said as well, Joe, when we were watching it, that he had such a tough season at Leicester, but he was by far and away the outstanding candidate. And sort of, he was maybe the leader in the group, he's been there for a while, and he wanted to try and encourage the team as much as they can to get away from the relegation trouble they were experiencing. But I mean, since we actually went up to Penny Hill and saw him, and he was captain in England for, you know, that game, that opening game against Wales, he's just been brilliant. He's, you know, he's taken on the role really well, and some people may wilt under that sort of leadership, but he seems to have flourished. His, you know, his kicking's been excellent, and his decision making's been great as well, and he's looked every inch a captain. So, you know, I said, and you can pull me up on this after potentially pulling up on Joe, saying England would lose to the USA. But I said I'd love to see Farrell 10, Slade 2, Alanghi combination, but Slade's been injured. Farrell's been pushed into 12, and Ford has absolutely flourished at 10. So that seems to be working so well, that Ford-Farrell axis. I think we saw it for one of England's tries as well. So, yeah, fair play to him. He's stood up, and he's been one of England's best players and deservedly man of the match this afternoon.
Yeah, admittedly, there weren't many players for England that stood out today. I'd probably highlight Lewis Ludlam, of course. Yeah. Seemed very difficult to take down in contact. Other than that, I don't really feel like there was anyone that I could really say was outstanding.
No, I mean, it was more, I don't know if you agree, Joe, some of the guys that came off the bench had a bit of an impact. You know, Alex Genge's absolutely storming run towards the end. So nearly ended in a try. Anthony Watson, brilliant when he came on, full of energy, looked at every bit of causing a tired USA defence problems. So a couple of those lads came on. Farrell still played, I thought, quite well when he came off the bench. Yeah. So, yeah, Jones will be happy that there's no injuries. That's the main thing. I mean, when Farrell took that hit, there was probably a bit of, you know, is he going to be okay? Is he going to have to come off for the concussion? He didn't. So fingers crossed that's the end of that for Farrell. So, but like I say, Joe, I think Ludlam was another outstanding performer.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that hit now. USA open side flanker John Quill, who plays for Rugby United New York, it's difficult to explain really kind of quite clearly what he did. So
it was like Farrell's a shoulder barge to the head, wasn't it?
Yeah, basically. Farrell was had just kind of picked up a ball from around his ankles, essentially, was correcting his height, and Quill comes in, turning the shoulder to the chin, and then there's head contact between the two of them. John Quill rightly red carded by the referee, who is, I believe it was Nick Berry.
Yes, and I think they said on commentary, didn't they, that his actual rugby career ended because of concussion, so he was straight on that. I think as soon as it happened, where we were watching it, Joe, myself, you, Max Ashcroft's mum, Karen, that's a bit of a shout out, and Max Goffich as well, we were all watching it, and straight away we said, red card. You know, there was no debate for us. It took us less than 2 seconds to say, all four of us were saying it has to be a red card. So, yeah, it's going to be, it was a decision that may have caused a debate, but for me, it was the right time to see the first red card of the tournament.
Yeah, stonewall for me. We're going to actually have a brief call with a man who was a friend of a man that scored his first Rugby World Cup try today. I think maybe his first England try, actually, and yeah, is that a Rugby World Cup? And that is former teammate of Rory McConachy, former teammate of what, Team GB and England Sevens?
Yeah.
Not too bad there.
Or you would say an Olympic silver medalist as well.
Yeah, two Olympic silver medalists, one on the podcast. Chris has had a conversation with Dan Bibby.
So I'm delighted to be joined now on the Talking Rugby Union podcast by Dan Bibby. Dan, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hi, how are you doing? You all right?
Not too bad. And I think there's probably only one place to start, and that's with England's win over the USA and your good mate Rory McConachy getting over. You must be chuffed for him.
I think there's a video on Simon Amell's Insta of us all going absolutely wild watching him. It was pretty, it's like a proud moment. I felt like a proud dad watching his son. seeing Rory sort of come through the programme, come straight out of uni, join us as a little fresher, and then go on to get his first cap and his first try. Sorry, it'd be his second cap, wouldn't it? But his first try, it's pretty special.
Yeah, because obviously you've seen a bit of the work we've been doing on Talking Rugby Union with Rory, and you've had a few words to say about it, about his quality, but just listening to you there, you say it's obviously a proud moment, because for someone to make that transition from sevens to 15s is never easy, but Rory has just seemed to have taken it to it so well.
Signing for Bath, obviously when he first did it, he didn't know how he'd go. Well, none of us did. We're really happy for him, like, moving on. Gutted to see him go. He took everything within his stride, really, and he got his opportunity at Bath, and he tore up, really. And then he definitely deserves the opportunity in the England squad, definitely deserves it, and he deserves to be there at the moment in the World Cup. It's funny, like I said, seeing him go through the programme, to watch his little spindly legs out there. he was always a sort of go-to man for us. When you thought almost, nothing was on, you would sort of just pass the ball to Rory and, cross your fingers and usually something special had happened.
Yeah. Did you expect him to sort of make this transition as seamless as he has made it out to be?
He was, like I said, he's a decent player, and I suppose going to 15, he already had that sort of all-around skill level.
Yeah.
Thing. We always said he was never excellent at one thing. He was just really good at everything. And it might sound like a bit of a criticism now, but it's definitely not. Everything that he did, he just did a world-class level. And that's the reason why he's in the team, because he literally serves those.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Dan, have you been in contact with him since he's been over in Japan? Because since he's gone big time, we've not been able to get in touch with him.
I was going to say, neither have I. That's the thing. At the time, he used to say, he's never texted you back because he couldn't afford a phone contract, but now I realise that's his wallet. Because he must be getting a decent whack being over there. I speak to him every now and then and try and catch up when I can. But he's a busy man now, all his endorsements and just, taking back some money and stuff like that, so he's a hard man to get hold of.
Yes, yeah, I mean, you mentioned there, obviously, the England 7 squad, we're delighted to see him go over and going into the season, then Dan, onto yourself. You mean, it is such a big year for you guys with the Olympics coming up in Tokyo. So, just watching the sort of the World Cup at the moment in Japan, I mean, how have you sort of seen the World Cup? Has that made you extra excited for the Olympics next year?
Yeah, obviously it's always exciting when the World Cup's on. Gives you an excuse to get out of the house and get down to the pub and watch a few games. Get away from the kids for 10 minutes on happy days. It's definitely put that sort of excitement factor on, because those are the sort of games you want to play and only like on the big stage when everyone's watching and against the best teams. And then it just sort of makes you, when you see like the crowds in Tokyo and stuff, it definitely makes you think, in a year's time, 12 months' time, that could be me playing in another Olympics. I think the buzz around the Olympics at the moment is already quite high. Big focal point for all of us in the sevens. I mean, that's ultimately what this season is about, is trying to get your name on that team sheet for Tokyo. But at the same time, I don't want to be the rugby answer, but it is a pretty long season. That's obviously everyone in the squad, that's the number one goal.
Okay, so very good to hear from Dan there. Thank you to Chris for taking that call. He's got a lot on at the minute. It's great to have Dan on. Very good player, Dan, wasn't he? Isn't he?
He really is. And he's obviously part of the England 7 setup once again going into this season. And he's obviously going to be massively excited by, first of all, what England can achieve. But since they were able to, Team GB were able to secure qualification for the Olympics next year, all eyes will be on that. They got so close in Brazil 4 years ago, getting beat by a wonderful Fiji team, and they'll be hoping to take a medal home from Tokyo. So exciting year for Dan.
Yeah, hopefully you're going to see Dan actually at that Chester Sevens event that's happening in late October. We're going to have a chat about that one. We're actually going to kind of take a look back at some of the other action that's happened this week. We'll start off with one of Chris's pool games. Actually, I think you were quite excited for this one in the lead up to the game. An interview with Graham Rowntree went out. That's another interview we've had this week. Graham Rowntree.
Yeah.
All the big names this week.
All the big names, as always, on TRU.
Oh, there we go. There's the promo. Wales versus Georgia. Wales run out 43-14 winners at the Toyota Stadium. Chris, was that what you expected from Wales?
They will have bigger tests. They'll have much bigger tests, no bigger than Australia on Sunday, but we'll get onto that in a bit. But after the week they had, it was 6 days after all the Rob Howley stuff had come out, and they would have been shocked by that. There's no doubt about those players who have worked with Rob for so long. He's been such a massive part of this Wales transition since Gatland's come in. For him to leave the World Cup, and arguably the World Cup, which they are one of the favourites to go and win and the best chance of winning the trophy, would have hurt them and would have been such a shock to the system. But Wales were so, so professional in their performance. They just said, right, let's do the rugby, let the rugby do the talking in the pitch. And that first 20 minutes were absolutely outstanding, completely blew Georgia away. I think Georgia helped them out though a little bit. I mean, defensively they weren't up to scratch, and that would have frustrated Graham Rowntree, but they were just cutting through them so easily, Wales, and to sort of cruise towards that bonus point, which is exactly what they wanted. And yes, they weren't at the best in the second half, and you said before in the office, Joe, that Georgia had been, did look a lot better in that second half. They seemed to have had a rocket in at half time from Milton and Graham, so they were a lot better. But Wales maybe sort of eased off, didn't want to give too much away before the Australia game on Sunday. But again, if you'd offered Warren Gatland that scoreline, 4-try bonus point before the game, after all they've been through, he would have taken your hand off. And it was a great start for Wales going into Australia this weekend.
Yeah, Justin Tipperick, probably the best performer of that game. He did some great things.
He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. Obviously scored the try. But towards the end of the game, he just continued to run and run. It was like a hopeful kick through, and he just chased it down. He was the first to the ball, and it was absolutely, his engine on him on Monday was absolutely brilliant. And Wales will be hoping that he, you know, obviously the loss of Faletau on the back row was such a blow to Wales, but when you have people like Tipperick, who's such a leader in this team as well, stepping up to the mark and really showing what he's capable of, was really pleasing for Wales. So yeah, it was Gareth Davies was absolutely phenomenal. I thought he dictated the play extremely well for Wales on Monday. So a lot of positives. I mean, they'll want to improve on a couple of things, and Gatland said that in his post-match interview. But yeah, Wales looking very good going into Sunday.
Yeah, the other game, well, actually, there wasn't another game that day. I was about to say the other game that day would be factually incorrect. No. That's wrong. The other game
Tuesday
followed. Tuesday, it was a
Samoa Russia, wasn't it?
Yeah, that would be I think it was quite late in the day, actually, that one.
Yeah, it was a bit of a luxury, wasn't it? It was like a 10:45, 11 o'clock kickoff for the first and only game of that day. So, I mean, it was one of those games where you thought, what were you going to expect, wasn't it, Joe? You sort of like Russia did well the first half against Japan, and you were thinking, what can they muster up? And it was Samoa's first game of the World Cup, and I know they were targeting to finish in that third spot, which gets you obviously qualification for four years' time at the Rugby World Cup in France. So, but yeah, I mean, I caught bits of it throughout working, and I thought Samoa seemed to control the game in the second half really well to pull away from Russia. But I think the main talking points from that game, Joe, were the two yellow cards that were given to Samoa, and potentially both could have been red, if I'm right in saying.
100% both could have been red. I'm actually just going to have to get the names in front of me because I have a mind like a sieve. Ray Lilo, and Moto Matau both made challenges on Russia's Vasily Artemyev within 2 minutes of each other, actually. And essentially, both should have been red cards. Both were high, both made contact to the head. And I'd probably say both were dangerous tackles too. Luckily, Vasily Artemyev is a man of steel and didn't get knocked out both times.
I think there was a little bit of similarities between one of them and the one that one that Farrell received today. There was sort of that sort of contact with the shoulders and head.
Would that be the, which one was that? Was that the Ray Lilo one?
I think it was. And it was, you know, I think that debate in commentary was for the Samoa game. Now they were saying, well, that's got to be a red card. And there was a bit of surprise, I think, when it was yellow. But yeah, I think those two decisions are up there, probably with the Reese Hodge one. But we said it in the last podcast, didn't we, Joe? Like, this will be talked about throughout the whole of the World Cup, and we just hope, fingers crossed, it's not going to dominate things.
Yeah, it was one of those when I... Well, actually, to be fair, the challenge from the hooker, the Moto Matau, that challenge was more of a Stonewall red card than the first, yet it got the same punishment. It was reckless as well as everything else that we said before, and... It was disappointing not to see the red card given in those games. But then the thing is, on that first challenge by Ray Lilo, actually the TMO got involved and said that but the opposition player is dipping.
Right. But, so that was the...
But they were both the same body height going into the tackle. So, you know, I think whoever's refereeing that day, I don't know.
It's just got to be, you know, there's a lot, I've seen so much talk about it on Twitter, and everyone's saying it's so hard for the referees, because I think it was actually Andy Goode, Joe, if he tweeted either yesterday or this morning, he was saying, but it's so hard for the referees, these laws keep changing, you know, but there is a protocol which they can follow. We've seen that through a couple of decisions, that they take the time with the decision, TMO looks at it, touch judge gets next to the referee, they have a conversation about it, and it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as they go through the protocol and come to that decision. You can't have any, you know, if they go through the protocol, come to the decision, fair enough, but it's this sort of
grey area where referees may think, well, let's just go and with my first instinct. Mm. So it's just going through the protocols, but it's not the last, and not the last incident I'm sure we'll hear at the World Cup, Joe.
No, probably not. And we did see Nick Berry today go through those incident lists, as well as actually on that that game on the other day between Samoa and Russia.
That's the thing. I mean, as I said before, we were straight out red card. And that's, you know, that's something the referees are going to have to... Hmm. Yeah, I know they're a lot more professional than me, but that's something they go through, isn't it, Joe? Because he could have easily gone, right, he might not even seen it, but if he did see it, he'd probably go red card straight away.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
He's gone to the TMO, let's have a look at it. Gone through it probably about a minute and a half, and I was saying to the telly, well, why is he looking at it for so long? But that's the reason why, to make sure that he's 100% happy with the decision he's made. So, yeah, fair play to the referee today.
Yeah, we should actually say that Russia-Samoa game was Russia 9, Samoa 34. So Samoa actually really smoked it in the end, considering, but they should have had two men taken off the field with red cards. So there you go. The next game, Wednesday the 25th of September, was a bit of a special day for everyone involved in South America, surely.
Unbelievable. Oh. Absolutely unbelievable, Joe, wasn't it? It was. I think we mentioned it in the last pod. We said, I reckon it could be an interesting game just because they're both sides that like to attack. But yeah. Goodness me. I mean, Uruguay was incredible. Absolutely incredible. It was an unbelievable performance, both in attack and defence, I thought, Joe.
Yeah, so it was Fiji versus Uruguay at the Kamayashi Recovery Memorial Stadium, which of course is a memorial to the terrible kind of events that took place several years ago. It was a tsunami following an earthquake, and you know, people going into the game in the local area saying, we just want to make sure that everyone knows this area is reborn. And you know, they really got a special occasion to kind of see that, which was Fiji versus Uruguay. Fiji lose 27 points to 30. 7 of those points came courtesy of Nico Matawalu after the clock went into the red. Yeah. So Uruguay, I think it's a maiden Rugby World Cup win.
Yeah, I think it is, Joe. I mean, it was just sort of before the game, Fiji make 11 or 12 changes, I think it was.
More than a lot of the other teams that have had short turnarounds, yeah.
And I think Sean Fitzpatrick was in the ITV studio, and he said they've shown absolutely no respect to Uruguay. Now, I don't know whether he was referring to the fact that they made so many changes or the fact the way they came into the game, because it was so casual from Fiji in that first half. And Uruguay were like, we're not having any of this. This is our first World Cup game. Let's go and have a go. And they were brilliant first half. And then Fiji just tried to engineer the way back into the second half. They think they scored an early try and everyone was like, here we go. The comeback's on. But Uruguay defended well, but Fiji was so poor. The amount of unforced errors they had was incredible. Oh, yeah. And they will be massively disappointing because everyone was hyped them up after a great hour against Australia. Such a disappointing result for Fiji. But for Uruguay, what an historic moment. I mean, this is a team 4 years ago that was all full of amateurs. And you read quite rightly, Joe, mentioned in the preview podcast that they're getting a lot of players in from, not a lot, but getting a few players who are now playing professional in the Major League Rugby over in the USA and in Canada. And that experience of that professionalism is brilliant. And I know that the head coach of Uruguay came in and said, for when he came in after that 2015 World Cup, was that we need to be more professional if we're going to take any sort of step forward. And for them to be sort of a top tier 2 nation in Fiji is an unbelievable statement. And now, Joe, that game on Sunday morning against Georgia is absolutely massive for them. They win that Uruguay and that's qualification for France in 4 years' time. So it's huge. It's huge for them. But what a moment for them. And it's sort of just spiced up Pool D very nicely. And Georgia will now know the pressure is all on them, I think, now on Sunday after that defeat to Wales. But what a moment for Uruguay.
Yeah, I hate to ask this one, but is this our Japan-South Africa already done?
I don't think it's on the same scale because of how big of a nation South Africa are.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, is this the closest we're going to get?
I really hope not. But because looking at some of the games that have gone so far and the strength of some of the teams, I would have maybe said Fiji, Wales or could have been potentially an upset. But I think this could be the only one in the pool stages. I mean, no one expected it going into because of the world rankings. It's just a phenomenal feat from Uruguay, and they'll be going into that. We've spoken to one of the lads who plays over there in Japan, and he's saying it is like a final for them on Sunday. So really, really looking forward to that. Those two games on Sunday, but I think you might be right, Joe. Just based on some of the scorelines we've seen and some of the performances so far, I think this could be the
maybe the only shock of the group stages, but I'm really hoping wrong.
Yeah, and one of those kind of scorelines we're looking at right now is unfortunately one against my native calendar, losing 48 points to 7 to the Italians in Fukuoka.
Yeah, I mean, I got the train to the office this morning, Joe, so I missed the majority of this game. Did you expect Callender to put sort of more up of a fight?
When I evaluated the injuries, when I actually was given a better representation of what the injuries were, there was probably six starters that Canada were missing. And when you think about what, like a nation like Canada, to go from six of those players that probably could be at championship or premiership clubs, if we're just going to literally apply these players to a way of playing in the UK, I'd say five or six of them could easily be in the premiership or at the higher levels of the championship with either Newcastle Falcons or Ealing or Cornish or whatever, not Yorkshire Carnegie. So when you're missing players like that, then overnight they lost their tight head prop Jake Ilnicki. He's played for Northampton and Newcastle. When you lose players like that with the experience like that, when they're at premiership environments or even just any professional environment around the world that's established, it is going to be a big miss. And it definitely did show DTH van der Merwe didn't look his best, which is a shame because you want him to have his last World Cup be something special. But you read my match report, you could probably tell there wasn't many positives I could take.
Was Italy sort of quick start, because I know they scored a few tries pretty early on, was that sort of probably taking any wind out of the Canadian sails, do you think? Or
it was a quick start, definitely. I mean that Bramstein try came probably less than 10 minutes in, and then the Dean Budd one probably a few minutes later, but each of them came from Canada mistakes.
Bramstein
picking from the base of a scrum and running through a centre, probably isn't the biggest surprise in the world, to be honest, if we've been really honest. Bromstein's a big South African man that is, you know, he's playing number 8 for a reason. And the Dean Budd try was shocking tackling. I'm sure Richard Wigglesworth, who we've got a shirt of just in front of me that I can see right now, that is signed by Richard Wigglesworth and several other of the Sale Sharks team from that season. I can't imagine he's going to be too thrilled with the players not making their tackles, which, you know, Dean Budd's a lock who isn't the most explosive or dynamic player in the world, and he's jetted through past them Canada players. It was just really disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, but sorry to heap more misery on you, but we'll talk about how sort of good Italy were,
because
they're sort of obviously their opening was, we expected Italy to win that game, but this game they really showed that even though they can change a few things in the squad, they can still perform. I mean, the back row, I think everyone was glowing about the back row. You mentioned staying scoring, but Seb Negri, who obviously TRU Comlis, but obviously close mate Jake Belledri, both absolutely outstanding, weren't they?
Oh yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, you know, I sometimes say when I played, you know, I played in the back row, so I really do appreciate kind of what goes on back there, and it's obviously been three years now since I actually pulled on a shirt, but you know, I do really appreciate what those guys do. I mean, Seb yet again had a great performance. But he was outclassed though by Jake Belledri. Jake Belledri who broke every game line basically when he carried the ball. And we briefly met Jake in Newcastle when we went up to see Seb. When was that? 2-3 weeks ago now. God, that feels like a long time ago.
Just doesn't it, yeah.
We saw Jake, obviously really nice man first off. And everyone at Gloucester was glowing about him actually when we had a chat with them about him. And he's such an explosive ball carrier, which you don't expect for someone of his size, because let's be honest, he's massive, and he broke the game line, and I think, I can't remember whose try it was.
There's a bit of a reason why Johan Ackerman decided to deploy him on the wing at one stage last season.
Yeah, it makes sense, you know.
It does all add up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's funny, before you get back to what you're going to say, right, Joe, that Max Skofic in the office, he's in the back row, and he said exactly what he said.
He plays open side flanker, yeah.
He was so appreciative of Belledri, but yeah, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is though, Jake's probably more of an attacking player than Seb, which is maybe why we're highlighting him more. Seb did all the nitty gritty, as good as he always does, and I think Seb's really put his ring in the hat to play that. Which one's their next game? Is their next game
South Africa? I think it is.
They've got South Africa, yeah. But they've got a bit of a break, haven't they? They've got about 7 days or something like that. Yeah, and then Bram Steyn, of course, as well. They had actually a little good story that they were talking about on the commentary there. You know, see how I reference the stories that commentaries use rather than the other way around. Basically, they were talking about how Bram Steyn was put on the bench for a under-20 South Africa's final game, the Junior World Championship, whatever it's called, and then thought, there's no way for me in South African rugby. So he moved to play Division 2 rugby in Italy, and now he's at a World Cup after the residency rule.
Bits of the World Cup.
And I think there's a fairly strong case now, because of the way he's played, there's a fairly good chance that he will not... His performances have put Sergio Parisse on the bench.
He's knocking on the door, isn't he?
Has to happen at some point.
Yeah, I think it's whether, you know, they say, right, let's stick with Steyn, who's played incredibly well. Let's see what we can do against South Africa. And then if, as the odds suggest, and papers suggest that they are going to get beat by South Africa, why don't give Parisse sort of the last hurrah, if you like, or against the All Blacks? So I think you're right, Joe. He's definitely knocking on the door, but impressive back row again from Italy.
Yeah, of course. It's just, you know, I think Italy genuinely now, I think they're pretty much the third place team, so they've got qualification for France in 2023. And the thing is, though, that kind of qualification means now that they can really knuckle down and actually, you know, really try and improve and actually try and get out of a pool stage, because actually, I didn't realise this, that's never happened.
No, it hasn't. I think that's the sort of gap they want to bridge, isn't it?
Definitely, because they're still classed as a Tier 2 nation, even though they've been involved. As of next year, they'd have been involved with the Six Nations for 20 years.
Wow.
And how many times have they finished above bottom two? Probably one or two.
Probably count on one hand.
And that's much of my life for anyone wanting to quantify that in a way. The person bringing this podcast is someone who has never seen Italy perform well.
Yes.
And before that, Italy were meant to be a good team. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm a curse.
Maybe you're all Italy.
Conor O'Shea's going to send Italian hitmen after
that. Seb won't speak to us ever again.
Hopefully talking to Seb on Saturday or Sunday or something like that. For another column from Seb Negri, who will be bringing you columns throughout this season, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully going to talk to one of his club coach, Kieran Crowley, as well, actually, after he's signed a new contract at Benetton to take him through to 2022. Now, Chris, quick preview of this week's games, or do you want to do your call with Gary Heatley first?
I think it ties in both. It ties in nicely, doesn't it? We'll be speaking to Gary next about Japan versus Ireland on Saturday. We'll be reflecting on sort of Scotland's defeat as well, and sort of Hamish Watson departing Japan with that injury. Terrible news for them. So next voice you'll hear is myself and Gary having a chat. So next on the podcast, once again, is our Pool A and Scotland correspondent, Gary Healy. Gary, let's start off with last weekend's defeat to Ireland. I sent you an email saying thanks very much for the report, spot on, and you replied with spot on, unlike Scotland. It was one of those days, wasn't it, for Scotland on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it was really disappointing. Obviously, you're going up against one of the best teams in the world, but a team that Scotland should believe that they can compete with, and really from the first minute they just seemed off the pace compared to Ireland. You know what Ireland are going to throw at you, and they did that in the first 20 minutes, half an hour, and Scotland just couldn't really respond. I think it was 12-0 before they even really got going. Just in attack, they couldn't get anything going. Phase play, they didn't seem to have the patience to kind of want to kick it up, and a lack of real ball carriers in the side. Then obviously Hamish Watson getting injured, it couldn't really be a worse start for Scotland, really.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Hamish Watson. I mean, so many people have said it's such a massive blow to their chances, and we've seen how effective he has been in a Scotland shirt, so certainly over the last 12 months, Gary. So how much of a disappointment is it going to be to Gregor Townsend that one of their key players is missing for the rest of the World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive blow. I mean, I think he's really the only out-and-out seven that they had in the squad. If you look at the sort of number of turnovers that are happening in other games, he's the kind of guy that can get over the ball and win that back. And I think now, in the back row, there's kind of much more matchness between five or six guys rather than a point of difference that Watson has offered. Also with the ball in hand, I think you saw against Wales in the Six Nations when he came on, you know, he's a good guy with ball in hand, and obviously they've since then lost Ali Price, the replacement Scott Half as well, who may well have started the next game, given that he kind of brings a lot of pace to the game, the dead weight loss. So yeah, those two are both big losses, I think, for Scotland. Obviously Magnus Bradley and Finney Progress come in, but I think they'll really miss Watson in particular.
Yeah, Yeah, most definitely, Gary. And I mean, starting off with Ireland for Scotland was always going to be billed as a big clash. I know he spoke to Scott Lawson last week and he was really looking forward to it. But did Scotland seem sort of a bit undercut to you on Sunday compared to Ireland?
Yeah, it's quite a strange one that they did seem undercooked. I mean, the first warm-up game of the summer, after that match, defence coach Matt Taylor said that perhaps they hadn't prepared the players correctly or the players weren't up enough for the match. And Gregor Townsend seemed to allude to that after the Ireland game, which is quite a strange thing given it's first game of the World Cup. I mean, obviously you can accept a defeat against a good Irish side, but I just think the way Scotland played, it didn't really give any indication, you know, that they were, you know, what the kind of game plan was, and that they were really kind of on the money for the first game. So that was disappointing. I mean, I guess the only sort of good point is they've had a, you know, quite a long layoff till the next game on Monday against Samoa, so hopefully they've kind of managed to get out of their system. And they need to win all the games now, so it's kind of every game's so important.
Yeah, because I was going to go on to the Samoa game on Monday. Obviously, they played on Tuesday and got the win against Russia. I mean, are you expecting quite a few changes, Gary, from a Scotland perspective, or are they going to try and go strong? Because, as you just alluded to, every game's got to be a must-win now if they're going to get to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to go pretty strong, but, you know, just given the way the team performed against the world, probably be a few changes in personnel, I think. It's probably got to try and get Darcy Graham off from the start. I think he's exciting in the back three. It can create something a bit different. You know, the centre partnership of Johnson and Taylor was the one that everyone's talked about, but they've never really played much together, and, you know, they didn't get much of an opportunity in the first game, so whether he sticks again with them or if he goes with a lot of other options. You know, Samoa against Russia weren't particularly great. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the two yellow cards that they got that could have perhaps been red. I know they've lost one of the bigger ball carriers in the back row who scored the try and then got injured, so that's a blow for them. So, you know, not too much of a small will have scared Scotland, I guess, but, you know, Scotland are kind of starting afresh really into the second pool game. So, yeah, it'll be a wait and see what 23 picks.
Yeah, and just one more on Scotland before we look at Japan versus Ireland, Gary. I mean, all the talk now seems to be for Scotland again, that last game in the pools about Japan. I think we spoke about it on the last pod, but do Scotland now just target that, or is it like you say, they have to make sure they beat Samoa first and then go into that last game?
Yeah, I mean, I was always quite surprised that, you know, a lot of fans and also even the coaches had always mentioned the Japan game, but nobody really mentioned Samoa. And, you know, no matter what Samoa did against Russia, which wasn't great, they've still got, you know, players that play throughout Europe and in the Southern Hemisphere as well, who can, if they quit, can cause problems. So, I think all we can think about at the minute is in this system more game, and giving themselves a bit of confidence, where that, you know, get a 4-try bonus would also be great, but I think, you know, it's just winning rugby at the minute is needed. So I think they can only really look as far as Monday, and then, you know, then they've got Russia, so they can perhaps then rest and rotate a few after that. But yeah, I don't think you can think about that until after this more game.
Yeah, and just finally, Gary, your first game of the weekend will be obviously Ireland against Japan. You watched Ireland against Scotland, and Japan have made quite a few changes from their opening game. We're probably in mind of targeting that final game against Scotland. So how do you think that game will pan out? Do you think Ireland will be as sort of convincing as they were on the weekend?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, it's going to be, I'd imagine, an amazing atmosphere there, and I think obviously Japan will come out the traps flying. But I think if Ireland can play to the structures that they showed against Scotland and sort of just the calmness that they have in the group, I think they'll, I think by half time it'll still be quite close, but I think Ireland will come through and get a bonus point win. I think if you look at, you know, they've made changes, even the players they bring in are very experienced, like Carney and Keith Earls and these kind of guys, and Chris Farrell's coming in, I think he did really well on the bench against Scotland. So I think it probably be a close one till half time, but I would imagine Ireland to kind of really push through in the second half, and then that means that they can then sort of look at resting players a bit more and rotating in the last couple of group games.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Gary. Well, Gary, thanks very much for your time again, and all the best for the weekend as well. Hopefully Scotland will get the result on Monday.
No problems, Chris. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Gary. Perfect. Thanks a lot, Gary.